సహనో భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. హరి ఓం. అథ యత్ర ఏతత్ ఆకాశం అనువిషణం చక్షు స చక్షుషః పురుషో దర్శనాయ చక్షు అథ యో వేద ఇదం జిఘ్రాణీతి స ఆత్మా గంధాయ ఘ్రాణం అథ యో వేద ఇదం అవివ్యాహరాణీతి స ఆత్మా అవివ్యాహరాయ వాక్ అథ యో వేదేదం శృణవానీతి స ఆత్మా శ్రవణాయ స్తోత్రం. అథ యో వేదేదం మన్వానీతి స ఆత్మా మనోవస్య దైవం చక్షుః స ఏవ ఏష ఏతేన దైవేన చక్షుష మనసా ఏతాన్ కామా పశ్యన్ రమతే య ఏతే బ్రహ్మ లోకే. ఓకే, అప్ టిల్ హియర్ వి విల్ సీ. హియర్ కమ్స్ ఎ మోస్ట్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ఎనాలిసిస్. వాట్ ఈజ్ ఇట్? If we have followed Drig Drishya Viveka, then we can understand that the I says, what is the role of the I? I is a sense organ. It is both that which is what is called the agent, and also it is an object of someone else's perception. So, Prajapati had taught Indra, you are not the physical body, you are not the subtle body, you are not the causal body. That means nothing of this, but they are there. What is the problem? When we are separated from this, there is no problem. The problem comes when we are with this. Then you say, I see. What is seeing? It is the eye which is seeing, and it is the ear which is hearing, it is the nose which is smelling, which is the tongue which is tasting, it is the skin or the organ of touch which is experiencing it. But what are we doing? We are identifying with it. So that should not be. If you are a realized soul, you don't say. That's why this Ramakrishna says, this body, who is eating? Somebody else is eating. So people had this experience, funny experiences. Ramakrishna was once eating. His own disciple, all this criticism comes only from near devotees, not from faraway people. Faraway people don't care. Because they are not, we are not concerned with them, they are not concerned with them. It is the near devotees, we say, we are all endowed with a thousand eyes. We are all sahasrakshas. What does that mean? It means when we look at our own faults, we look only with one eye. But when we look at others, we use
thousand.
It is like, you know, telescope. A man with a telescope, when he looks at others, he looks in the normal way. It is big, the big lens is on the other side, small lens is towards us. Then even the slightest fault is magnified a million times. But when the same man looks at himself, he reverses the telescope. He says, even the biggest fault also is very tiny. That is what lands us into
trouble.
So what should be the way? We should look at ourselves as we are also looking at others. What does that mean? That means when you are eating, I don't say I am eating. When you are seeing, I don't say I am seeing. Whatever you do, I don't attribute it to myself. So when this body mind is functioning, if we can look upon it exactly in the same way. Okay, the eye is seeing, that fellow's eye is seeing. What has that got to do with me? This is what Mahapurush Maharaj, somebody asked him, his own disciples, Maharaj, how old are you? So he said, I am not even born and you are asking my age. Yeah, that is their experience. Oh, no, I am asking about this body, it is maybe 70 years old. That is their normal experience. Yeah, not only normal experience, they have abnormal experiences also. I mean, from our viewpoint, it's very abnormal. One night at 10 o'clock, Mahapurush Maharaj called his attendants and bring 1 kg of hot jalebi. So the attendant said, where do we get jalebi? We might get somehow hot jalebi, because in those days there was no electricity or anything.
No, micro.
One fellow, I saw a Telugu cartoon. He went to a cinema hall to see the cinema. Fans were running and the cinema was going on. So suddenly electricity went off. It was very hot. This fellow was remarking, all right, the cinema may not run, electricity has gone, but why can't they run the fan? Microwave. Even today so many people have not heard the name microwave. Yeah. So that was there. 10 o'clock he said, yet. But you know, when the word comes from those Satya Sankalpaha and Satya Kamaha, every realized soul, his description is, he is a Satya Kama and Satya Sankalpa. Kama and Sankalpa. Satya, both are Satya. What is Satya Kama? Only true desires arise in that person's mind. In our mind, so many false desires come. And that's why they never get fulfilled. So we have to desire what is truthful desire, true desires. What is true desires? That depends upon our state of life. Suppose a child, I want a Cadillac car. Is it Satya Kama or Asatya Kama? What is he going to do? If he says, I want a toy Cadillac car, that is Satya Kama. But Satya Kama in our case is maybe true desire. But we are not Satya Sankalpas. It may not get fulfilled. Yeah. So, but in the case of a realized soul, only true desires arise. And what is the true desire in a realized soul's mind?
God's will.
Yes, in a way. But what it means is translated into day-to-day language. See, the man has realized God. There is nothing else for him to do in life. If at all a desire arises, only one desire. What is that? Let me do some good to the people. Even that desire itself comes by God's grace. Because he has no mind of his own. There is no ahankara there. He merged himself in God. So even to say, I will desire the good of the world, doesn't come in his mind. So if at all any desire comes, you have to know that is the desire of God for the welfare of the world. And whatever desire arises in their mind, instantaneously it becomes fulfilled because it is God's will. So can anybody say that God willed, but God alone knows whether it will be fulfilled? It has to be fulfilled. There is no other way. So how is it? Is that when you are dreaming, you are a Satya Sankalpa. When you are dreaming, you are a Satya Sankalpa. That means whatever you desire, you will dream. Every day we are building up our dream. Then naturally the question comes, why do I dream foolish dreams? Because that is your Sankalpa. From a fool's mind, what other Sankalpa will come?
Foolish.
Only foolish desire will come. Foolish Sankalpa. But the speciality is, foolish desires arise both in Jagradavastha and Swapnavastha. So the difference is, in Jagradavastha, they won't be fulfilled. Say you want to fly, nothing is fulfilled. But in dream, instantaneously you will see yourself hovering over the Vedanta society or whichever person you don't like. Yeah, there was this man, a priest, he was bitten by a dog. He did not know whether it was a rabid dog or a healthy dog. So he went to the doctor's office and he was waiting for the doctor to call him in. And meanwhile, he saw a writing pad, took up a pen, started scribbling. And then the doctor came, he said, "What are you writing?" He said, "You know, doctor, in case I become rabid, then I want to bite these fellows." Why should I waste my life? Anyway, I am going to be rabid. Sankalpa. Actually, we all have those sankalpas. When you are angry, what is your sankalpa against the person who made you angry? You may not do it, but at that moment in your mind, you have already done something. So this is a normal experience that we have. Yeah.
Maharaj, what is the difference between sankalpa and desire?
Desire means just wanting something. Sankalpa means it will come true. So in our case, in the case of God or God-realized soul, they are one. Brahmavit, Brahmaiva, Bhavati. So in his case, whatever desires arise, it is only God's desires, God's mind. But they will be fulfilled. Because why they will be fulfilled? They are satya kamas, they are true desires. There is no selfishness involved there. And he is God. Whereas in our case, without paying the price, we can't fulfill our dreams, desires. But in dream, we can imagine ourselves, you know, where you want to be and what you want in front of you. Instantaneously, the thought itself manifests in the form of a picture. That is what happens in the dream state. So what is the point here, we are discussing here? Let me read it. Now, where the sight merges in akasha, inside the eye, the black pupil of the eye, there exists that which is the person in the eye, and the eye is only for his seeing. Let us analyze this, then it applies to all other things. It is an imagination, it is not 100% true picture. So they say there is a relationship between eye and the akasha. Because what is akasha? That which makes for forms, opportunity for forms. The definition of akasha is avakasha. Avakasha means what? Sujo. Opportunity. So, akasha is that which gives an opportunity. You want to sit there. You can't sit there unless there is a space there. If someone else is occupying that space, you can't occupy that space. Not possible. So, that is the definition of akasha. Akasha gives rise to all sorts of forms. So, you see a form. So, that is the relationship between the eye and the akasha. So, every organ, sense organ has its own relationship with the corresponding bhuta. What is the, this one, akasha?
Eye
and ear, all. In one way, akasha is really sound. But here akasha means where the form is met. Actually, the presiding deity of the eye is Surya, Aditya. So he is telling there is Surya reveals, but the form is somewhere in the akasha. That is the connection. Then what happens? How does the man who is inside see? So it is like a man behind the narrow end of the telescope. You know, you are there behind that narrow end of the telescope. You are perceiving. Like that, behind this pupil, because in those days, they are not scientific, you see, behind this pupil, a man is sitting there, like a cameraman. He is sitting there and he sees it. What is the point? The point is the seer is different from the seen. The experiencer is different from the experiencer. So that is what he is telling. Which is the person in the eye. There is a person in the eye. Let us analyze it. What is it? So how many persons are there? There is a person behind the ear, behind the eardrum. There is a person behind the skin. There is a person behind the nose. There is a person behind the tongue. How many persons are there?
Five.
They are not five. What I am asking is, there is only one person. So what does he do? First he is wherever he is. Suppose he is sitting behind the nose. Then the smelling experience comes. Then he runs to another window. Imagine five windows. Then he runs to another window called eye. He stands behind. Immediately he will see the form. Then he will run behind the tongue. And he stands behind the tongue. Yeah, the input comes. Oh, I taste this. So like that, as though he is shifting himself to a behind every sense organ. But person means here consciousness. Where is not consciousness? He is everywhere. Then why is the Upanishad telling as if a person is sitting there? Because when we experience something, that consciousness is focusing only on that experience. So this is a theory of Vedanta. The mind can do only one thing at a time. When you are seeing, you are seeing. When you are hearing, it is a second experience. When you are smelling, third experience. When you are tasting, fourth experience. When you are touching, fifth experience. But sometimes these things happen so fast, it appears as though they are all happening simultaneously. So the mind has that ability to coordinate all these things and then project the complete picture. So we are not analyzing, I am seeing a man. But not only I am seeing a person, I am also hearing, I am also smelling and all those things. See, do you get the point? So what is the point? The experience is different from the experience. How do you know? How do you know? That's why this analogy is given. Imagine there are five windows in a room. And a man is running from one window to the other. But even when the man is, say, let us say a man is behind window number two. But something is happening behind window number one, window number three, four, five. Only the man is able to see only what is happening in window number two. So that gives the impression that
someone else is
behind. So that there are different persons are sitting behind different windows. But the fact is, he is the same man who is running up and down. So what is the point here? The point is, when the man is not behind window number one, that window is still the sight, something is going on. Only thing is, he will not have the experience. Even though the experience is going on, he will not have the experience simply because he is not behind the window number one and other windows, isn't it?
So, Maharaj, can we say the experience is still going on? Experience.
Yes, but for practical purposes, there is no experience. Yeah. Because without the experiencer, there can be no experience. The point of my giving this illustration is that the experience is non-existent without the experiencer. And at the same time, the experience is dependent upon the experiencer, because its very existence must be recognized by the experiencer. But the experiencer can remain without the experience. Suppose he closes his eyes and sits. All the five windows are open. Something is going on behind every window. But they are useless because he is simply not contacting them. This clearly shows that experience and experiencer are totally two separate things. That the first point. Second point, who depends upon whom?
The experience
depends upon the experiencer. That means experiencer is independent, the experience is dependent. And the point is in Vedanta, that which is dependent is nonsense.
Nonsense,
it makes no sense. That's what it means. Nonsense. Person non grata. Very VIP. You know what is VIP?
Very important.
But also very insignificant person. Understand? Yeah.
So Maharaj, is that the same relationship between the experienced and the experiencer? So
everything. Okay. What is an experienced
object?
See, experience occurs only once, but that experienced is transformed, stored in the form of memory. Memory is a thought. So whenever you remember something, you are present, that experience is present. This is a very important point. It is not in the past.
Right.
It is right now you are experiencing. So it can have an effect. Yeah. How?
Present.
Suppose you are in Delhi 4 years back and somebody slapped you. That experience is there in your mind. Now if you can focus on it, you will experience the effect. You get angry and all those things. That is our problem. This is our problem. Because this is a most important point for us. Why we are not able to get rid of Maya? See, you experienced some pleasure. Sometime. It could be even last birth or birth before. But that impression is there. And then what happens, whenever you recollect that experience, you remember that pleasure. Now I will ask you one question. When you recollect that pleasure, are you happy person or are you just indifferently recollecting that experience?
It depends upon the experience.
It doesn't matter what experience. If it is unpleasant, it is unpleasant. If it is pleasant, it is pleasant. So I will graphically illustrate how it comes. Some time back you experienced first class, avakaya. Maybe in your childhood. But now that avakaya is not available. But whenever that avakaya memory comes, what happens to your tongue? What does that mean?
Yeah,
that means I'm trying to, even though physical object is not there, the effect is as though you are tasting. And it is this which makes our life both happy or miserable. So how it is, this is how the samskaras are perpetuated. You have experienced some pleasure. And it gave you so much of pleasure. Now that pleasure is not there, but you long for it. You always recollect how wonderful it is. Let me have it once more. Even though you know it is not available, your mind doesn't listen to you. And that is why it is not available. So let me think about God. No, it says I want that. The pervertedness of the mind is what is available, you don't like. What is not available, that is what you like. Psychologically, this is what happens. Oh, husband complains to the wife. When we were meeting secretly, how much you used to love me. Now, you don't love me so much. You know why? Because at that time, what she was loving was not the person. What she was loving was her idea of the person. But that those illusion of that person was scattered as soon as they were married. You see, that is why it is called wrong. Love is blind. But how long will it remain blind? Not for long.
I see you. I see you.
Marriage is eye open.
Yes, it is true.
Yes, true.
So, what this shows, psychologically, what this shows to us, if we want to have an, you know, loving life together with anybody, we must have that imaginary, this thing. Pure fact, if you take, then it will break. And that is why Holy Mother also said two things. First, a disciple should not live, stay with the guru for a long time. Should not live. Why? Because in the beginning we are looking at the romantic eyes. My guru, he closed his eyes and he was in samadhi. But when you start living together with the guru, he closed his eyes and he was anahata dhvani is coming. you understand? Anahata, this is what I said, anahata dhvani, unwanted noise. Not only undesirable, but unwanted also. So, then your illusions are broken. Oh, my guru also sleeps. Then you get confused. You know, whether how to distinguish when he is in samadhi and when he is not in samadhi. So, it is if you are at a distance and see him only for 15-20 minutes in a day from a long distance, your devotion will remain intact and it will go on increasing day by day. Unless you have been granted that real bhakti, guru bhakti. This is what happens. So that is how most of these gurus perpetuate, you know. They go and then give darshan only at this time. What is happening inside, they won't show you. Only few people know. And those few people have no respect for them. Except when these people have some miraculous powers. Then the man always remains a mystery. But that is a mystery. That is why if we show some miracle, then it will, the reverence will remain for a long, long time. Yeah. Okay. So, it is the same phenomena. Holy Mother used to say, I always give puja of Thakur to a newcomer. You know, an old Swami, 60 years, he is still doing puja. And he will do it indifferently. You expect otherwise. Why? Because you are otherwise. You understand?
Not wise.
You are not wise. You are otherwise. That's why you expect. That is what Chaitanandji was trying to tell.
10 years of
watching. We have not seen that, you know, skepticism, that thing creeps in. Whereas a newcomer who knows Thakur's. I heard so many things also like that. Maharaj, today I had a vision of Thakur. What happened? I went and then early in the morning, 4 o'clock, and prostrated. When I opened, Thakur came down from this figure. How much time did you see? Just as soon as I blinked my eye, again he disappeared. So, in what state he was? You see, that sustains our devotion to God. We always want a romantic element. Yeah, that's why, you know, somebody, after 15 years of marriage, their husband doesn't notice even the wife. So one day, one wife, they bought new dress and then standing there waiting for the husband to return from the office. And he came and he was walking. She was waiting that he will notice. He did not notice. She had no option but to say, do you see anything special? He looked and said, that window, a little stain. He was looking beyond her, through her. It is foolish on our part to expect these kind of things to happen. It is normal life, you know. I am not saying that one should not dress well or anything. What I am saying is to expect the same thing. When they were meeting, then that is very necessary. This is nature's strategy. Something, you know, is very, now that the job is done, there is no need for the romance. Now, this is a fact. This is not what is called visitor's visa. It is a you see, coming back to our subject, the Prajapati is telling us that when a person really had gone beyond these three, they are also experiences. This is the description of now that man's experience. Previously I thought I was seeing, I was hearing, but now I know that Purusha who is within. Who was that Purusha? That Purusha was a bound Purusha. Because he was a Jivatma. How do you know? Because he was identifying himself. But now, I know clearly, that is Jivatma who is doing, but clear separation is there. The seer is different, the seen is different. This is the understanding throughout this passage. So the eye is only for his seeing. It is an instrument. It is for him to use. And he who knows I smell this is the Atman. The nose is for smelling. And he who knows I speak this is the Atman. The organ of speech is for speaking. He who knows I hear this is the Atman. The ear is for hearing. Atha yo veda idam manvaniti, and he who knows I think this is the Atman. The mind is his divine eye. Through this divine eye of the mind, he verily sees these desired objects which are in the Brahman world and rejoices. So that part needs a little bit of explanation. He is already liberated. He knows he is separated. But he is describing Brahmaloka. Even if you go Brahmaloka, that is also an experience. What is the difference? That is the highest experience in the dualistic world. That is called Brahmaloka. Or Puranas, they call it Vaikuntha, or Kailasa, or Devi Loka, or Goloka, or Ramakrishna Loka. It is Brahmaloka. So when you go to Ramakrishna Loka, are you totally liberated? Or are you still bound?
Bound.
You are still bound. But here is a man who says, in Brahmaloka he enjoys it. But he is not bound. But he knows that the experiencer is different from the experience. Brahmaloka is like Brahmakara Vritti is called Brahmaloka. When a person's mind is fixed on one Vritti, he enjoys the greatest felicity or joy. Why?
There's nothing else. You don't see it from there. There is no desire.
Because the distinction, the separation between him and the pure consciousness is the thinnest. What it means is, he is looking at himself through a mirror. So, the mirror is the panchakosha. If it is, you know, there is a mirror. And imagine you paint it with five paints. And it is giving you faintest reflection. Because it is covered by five layers of paint. It is giving some reflection. But it is the faintest reflection. you wash away one layer, it gives a better reflection. Wash away second layer, still better. And then you washed away four layers. There is only one layer. And that is where, and one layer means, again you have to imagine, the thickness of each layer is not the same. And the color of each layer is not the same. So imagine from black to white. So this is the, means even see through, you say that?
Mm-hmm.
Almost. This is what Sri Ramakrishna's description. You are touching the seeing the flame.
Fire.
But you can't even see that there is an obstruction. It is so fine, you don't even feel.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some glasses, you know, you put like that. And it is so fine, you don't see the glass at all. You walk through. Yeah. There are so many devotees who walk through. Walk out and never come back again. Why? Because they have broken the door. And if they come, they have to pay. They don't come back. They did that to our Vedanta center. Last Krishna Janmashtami. Simply a man walked out in ecstatic joy. The whole front door was peace. And after that he never came. Because everybody saw him. If he comes back, then he will have to pay.
He should have paid right then and then.
No, we were concerned, you know. If he did not sue us, if it was in America, probably he would have sued us. Why did you use that kind of glass where I can't see where I am walking?
There is written on the glass of Sri Ramakrishna Vedanta Center, isn't it?
See, you wrote in such a way, I can't see it clearly. You know, there are people in this country, they do that. Yeah, so anyway, so this partition is so thin, we feel we don't see the partition, yet we feel the partition. That is called Brahma Loka or Ramakrishna Loka. That's why in the Vedantic terms, what is it called? Anandamaya Kosha. There is nothing there. Anandamaya Kosha. What is the difference? In deep sleep, that is not real Anandamaya Kosha. Ananda is there, but you are not conscious. Whereas what we are talking here, you are 100% conscious about that fact. Still there is. That is why Brahma Loka, Anandamaya Kosha, Kailasa, Vaikuntha, Devi Loka, Ramakrishna Loka, whichever Loka. But we see the same. If a man wants to see Shiva, he will see Shiva. And every devotee has a Shiva Bhakta. Just imagine, there is Vishnu Bhaktas, Vaishnavas, you know, Namas like that. All thousands of Vishnu Bhaktas. Suppose a Shiva Bhakta attained to this state. He will go there. You know, all these Namas immediately change their appearance. Everybody is a Shiva Bhakta. And Lord Vishnu will turn into
Shiva.
Lord Shiva. Because he is seeing through his tinted glass. So that there is no form there. Whichever form you want, you can see it. Like Krishna's painter.
Maharaj, it's still...
Oh, after it is done, I will see God.
Maharaj, it's still not clear to me, like, experiencer and the experience is different. So, when I'm eating, let's say, a pickle, so who is experiencing? The body is experiencing and the experiencer is different, or...?
Without the association of consciousness, your body cannot even eat. So if somebody puts his mouth, you don't say, I am eating. To be able to say, I am eating, you should be conscious, isn't it? So that shows you have the independence. You can choose, I want it, I will eat, I will not eat, and I will go elsewhere. Is it not? So he who has got independence is the experience. So you can choose whether to have that experience or not. That is why you are called the experiencer. The experiencer, whatever he experiences, is not same. Why? The reason is, if the experiencer experience is the experiencer, then the experience is always with the experiencer. What is it that distinguishes the experience with the experiencer?
Time, space, and
consciousness. No. If it is experience and experiencer are one, it is only, you are only calling
then
two
you
names.
Yes.
You will never know that experience. Because whatever is nithya, that you cannot experience it. Why? Every experience starts in time. So I am seeing you, you know, now. I am see, and then you go away. Then I am not seeing you. So I had an experience. But if I am seeing it constantly, then I can't say it is an experience, because it is, there is no beginning, there is no end. Not only that, I will not be able to distinguish you from anything else. Time makes us wishing, I saw you at this time, at this place. They go together. Is it clear now? Because these are concepts which we have to meditate upon, even to intellectually understand them. Otherwise, it doesn't make any much meaning about that. So, an experience is one that which begins in time. In fact, when we are saying I, do you say that I was not there half an hour before? Suddenly, I realized I am at 7 o'clock. What were you before 7 o'clock?
I.
That is why you are unable to distinguish yourself. You can never experience yourself. In the sense we understand what is experience. But you are ever experienced. Because you are that. This is the distinction. Anything that is starts in time and in a particular place, that is what we call an experience. Anything that begins also ends. You know, you are seeing me, and after 2 hours, you take your lunch, and then you go away. Then you don't experience me, you experience something else. So that is why this memory, it is a thought. Any thought is, oh, when you are aware, it is a thought. When you are not aware, you don't even know that there is a thought. You see now the point? These are all very, very subtle concepts. Yeah.
So, Maharaj, in that state, still this the subject and object relationship is...
Without, when there is an object, the relationship between subject and object is eternal. If there is no subject, there is no object. If there is no object, there is no subject. There is something. But you don't call it
subject.
That's important.
Maharaj, if there is no object, there is no subject. Subject, effort, subject always remains regardless of the object.
The very name we give as subject is meaningless when there is no object. But that should not give rise to the idea that there is nothing. There is something, but you can't call it either subject or object or anything like that. That is called Atma. In fact, what is Atman? One way of understanding Atman. You go on saying, this is not me, this is not me. In the end, what remains?
That is
right. Because when there is nothing to deny, what remains? Then you can't say, I deny myself. Even to deny yourself,
you have to be there.
That is Atma.
Maharaj, the subject, is that the same as the relative consciousness or reflective consciousness?
No. Yes. Subject, what we call subject, is that reflected consciousness. Yeah. The pure consciousness, you can't call it either as a subject or as an observer, sakshi, you can't call it. It's beyond description. And so every day we are supposed to sing Namo Namo Prabhu.
Vakya
Mana Ati. So, what is the point we discussed so far?
Mm-hmm.
The experience is
always separate from the
experience.
Independent on the experience.
This is the first step in spiritual progress. First step. Still, you are experiencing. But you know now that even though I am the experiencer, previously you have become with the experience. That means if there is an angry incident, you become angry. There is an irritating experience, then you have become an irritator experience. You have become one. But after this realization, you say, okay, there is an irritating experience. There is an angering incident. There is a pleasurable incident. That is all you realize it. But you know it has nothing to do with me. In fact, we experience this all the time. But we don't pay attention.
But Maharaj, if it's an angry incident, how would I know it's angry if I'm not experiencing it?
It's just an incident.
No, no. I am not saying you don't experience it. I am saying you don't identify it. Experiencing and identifying are two separate incidents. Let me give an illustration. So you are working or walking and somebody comes and shouts at you, criticizes you or abuses you. Is an incident. Now, how do you become angry?
You associate.
So, it is not that immediately you become angry. It appears as though immediately you became angry. What is the first process? Your mind takes cognizance. This fellow is criticizing me. No, you don't even do that. The first process, this person is making some sounds. Yeah. And if it is, supposing it is Chinese sounds?
Chinese.
I told you that story.
Yes, stepped on that.
Yeah, remember?
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. You know, one man, a friend of a man was in the hospital. So the man went to the hospital. And he spoke with his friend. And then in the ward, you know, there was other patients. So he said, naturally we do that. He went to one man and he was full of these tubes and other things. So he was standing there and wanting to console him, convey his... So that fellow was making strange noises. And that was in Chinese language. First of all, it is... through all masks and everything. Second, it is in Chinese language. And this fellow did not know. So within a few minutes, that fellow expired.
No, I never met this.
Yeah. Then what happened? This fellow was sad naturally. After 10 years, he went to China. But he remembered some of these words. He asked the Chinese people, what do these words mean? And then they said, it means, get off my oxygen tube. What is the point we are making? Did you understand?
Cognizant.
These processes, how we experience, we take it as a unitary way of experience. You know, there are several steps involved. First, you see the person. Sometimes we don't see the person also. We don't notice. He's there, but we don't notice it. But first you notice. Then you say, he is making some sounds. Then your memory comes. What is the meaning of these sounds? That means you must know the language that person is speaking. Otherwise, it makes no meaning. You, if he uses universal language, you can understand, you know. But if he is only talking, you may understand, you may not understand. So, then you say, this person is speaking, it is English language, this is what he is telling. He is criticizing. Then you judge what those words are. You judge. These are all separate processes, but taking place very fast. Then you say, this person is criticizing me. What shall I do? The mind is asking, the buddhi, what shall I do? The buddhi says, get angry. This is a, abusing me. He is abusing me. And then, oh, he is abusing me. What shall I do? He says, get angry. And then, you become anger. You become anger. See, I became angry means I became
anger.
So many steps are there. So I will tell you. Suppose you don't understand the language, how you interpret it? You see a small child and you say, rascal, smilingly. That fellow breaks into the broadest smile. He thinks it is you are complimenting him, you are loving him. It all depends on the. That is what Thakur's story of Dan.
Yeah.
Oh.
If you are.
Yes. Yeah. You remember what is Dan? I won't utter that word Dan. See, but at the point, so many steps are involved. Suppose somebody lovingly calls you a bad name. Like one of devotees called him a bad name.
Oh, you are wicked.
You are wicked. I said, what wicked? I delivered such a good speech. And he says, I am wicked. Seeing my face, perhaps some other devotee has interpreted it or misinterpreted it. You know what is misinterpreted? If a misinterprets it, it is called misinterpreted. So, Swami, he complimented you. This is the latest jargon, that if somebody says you are wicked, that means you are very, very good. Then you can add any number of what is called adjectives, where you are very, very wicked. You know, language changes. But if we know, then we feel happy. Same word. Language always changes.
Well, Master Anandaji told us a story that one friend slapped the other guy. He said, hey, why did you do that? He said this to me. That I said 2 years back, well, I didn't know the meaning.
You know, this is also happens. Somebody told us something. At that time, you don't mind it. Suddenly, after going there at home, and up, then you remember it, what does it mean? And by the minute, you are becoming a different person. You know how much we are subject to these modifications. So, what I am trying to tell you, what are these? So there is a gap, you don't immediately become angry. All these successive steps, the last step is you became the experience. So if you can analyze it, this person is talking something. Okay, if it talks, what does it matter? These are words. You simply say, and that's it. You don't get angry.
And doesn't the buddhi also tell good advice sometimes, but we don't listen to it?
Most of the time, it tells us only good, it gives us only good advice. We call it viveka, the sense of viveka. So, buddhi always advises us good, but depending upon our samskaras, we take, we don't listen to it and all that.
So, Maharaj, after the buddhi step, who takes action? Buddhi gives one input, so mind takes action.
There is an hierarchy is there. Say, supposing, so you see it is 12:30 and there is food and there is a sweet. So, the sense organ sees that food and then reports it to the mind, its master. There is food here. And the mind gives this, mind has got more intelligence. The eye says there is just food. It doesn't say anything. But the mind has past experience. This is tasty food. This is not tasty food. It tells. To whom?
To the buddhi.
It conveys to the buddhi. And the Buddhi tells, since it is good food, tasty or tasty means pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
So you better take that food.
Mm.
So it passes that command, definitive command, you know. Mm. Shall I do, shall I not do, like that.
Mm.
Then the mind gives order to the sense organs. So it says to the legs, go near to that object.
Mm.
It tells to the hands, you grab that object. And then it tells to the hand again, put it in the mouth. It tells to the mouth, start watering, salivating.
Yeah.
Because automatically it doesn't do it. But so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was tested by his guru. You know what was the test?
Sugar on
his tongue. The guru put sugar on his tongue. And after 5 minutes, he blew like that. And all the sugar flew away, not one single grain. That means there is no water. Now you test yourself, you heard the sugar.
Come on.
Yeah, because it is already melted. This is our, it happens very fast. So we can put a stop and say, even though it is good food, I don't need to go for it. It depends upon how we train our mind, what we want, etc. So this is the process, that is what saves us really. That is where we can get control. Otherwise, you have no control at all. The buddhi can do both. It can bind you, it can also release you. So, what is the point we are discussing? Experiences is different from experience. What way? Experiencer is nitya, eternal. Experience is in time. It begins and it ends. And that way, these are conflicting things. The eternal and the non-eternal cannot be the same. That discrimination comes here. That is what is called nitya, nitya vastu, viveka and all that. Viveka, buddhi. Then, vairagya. What is not helpful, let me give it up, etc. Okay? So, the whole point, the mind is meant for whom? For the experience. The buddhi is meant for whom? So, the whole body-mind complex is meant for whom?
Experience.
Yeah. So, this is what Prajapati wanted to speak. Then here he says, he means the realized soul, verily sees these desired objects which are in the Brahma world and rejoices. What do you mean by rejoices? When he rejoices, he rejoices as a master. That means he has the control. Okay, enough. I don't want to. I withdraw my mind. Immediately it goes into samadhi. Whereas our case, it cannot come out. This is the thing. Now, another point with regard to this is, does he need to go to Brahmaloka only to enjoy these things?
No.
That means wherever he goes,
that is
Brahmaloka. But does he want to go to Brahmaloka?
No.
Why does he want to go to Brahmaloka? Because there is a higher happiness than Brahmaloka. Do you see the point? When the experiencer knows that I am not the experience, something strange happens. What is that strange thing that happens?
Knowledge about the true self.
Yes, that is all taken for granted. You have to understand what it means.
When a person is an experiencer already, he's realized that there are nothing separate for enjoyment over there.
Hmm.
So why does it say he rejoices? He has become Ananda.
This is what he wants to convey indirectly. He doesn't need any Brahmaloka. That is what he wants to convey. He rejoices. Why? Because the moment we understand experience is different from the experiencer, so long all our happiness is coming from where?
Experiences.
From the experience.
Yes.
Where from we are getting the pleasure of sweet? from this way. You see the point? This is our normal experience.
Normal.
Okay. So if a person listening, that experience is different from the experiencer, then he automatically calculates. So far as we know, all happiness is coming from an object, experiencing an object. Now the person has no connection with
object.
Any object. Then he may be a person without any happiness.
Mm-hmm.
An experienceless person is a person without joy. To eliminate that doubt, it is telling that he wherever he goes, it is Brahmaloka.
Mm-hmm.
So then I raised the point. Brahmaloka means what? Simple way of understanding Brahmaloka is the highest type of experiential happiness.
So, examples like experiencing a sweet, etc., is like very pleasant experience. But what about a sad experience for him?
You see, the point here is we avoid experiences which bring us unhappiness. Both pleasure and pain, both come only from an object. But we are taking the example of good, happy experiences, pleasant experiences. The same logic also applies there. This, the experiencer and the experience is separate. Therefore, I realize it so. That means he has neither happiness nor unhappiness because there is no object. Then he is like a stone. No.
No.
He doesn't experience any unhappiness. On the contrary, he experiences the highest type of pleasure even without that object. That is the point.
I didn't understand this point. How will he experience the highest type of pleasure when there is nothing to experience?
He himself is his own experience. And what is his nature?
Satchidananda.
So, to understand that, the volume has become too much.
Yeah.
So, echo is coming too much. So the point we have to understand very clearly, no, one day you may not understand. You go on thinking about it. Suppose you are eating a sweet. Where is the happiness in this sweet? Is it in the sweet or is it in you? Normal experience.
It's in me, but I have to eat something to experience it. Or memory.
No. You are committing a mistake. To experience happiness, you don't need to eat. Now, I will further illustrate because these points have to be grasped immediately as soon as somebody says you have to understand. Otherwise, then we have to elaborate it. What did we say? When you eat a sweet, what did you want?
Happiness.
When you listen to a beautiful music, what do you experience?
Happiness.
Now, my question to you would be, the happiness you experience by eating a sweet and the happiness you experience by listening to music, are they same or are they different?
Different. Same. Maharaj, based on music is the closest in the koshas experience.
I'm not talking about that. Talking, can you distinguish?
They both
happen. Okay. I have to, go through a lot of exercise. For example, a businessman. So he is selling jaggery. He is making profit. He is selling some cloths. He is making profit.
Money.
So he is doing something else and he is getting. So what is he getting? Money. So when you put, he sold jaggery, put money. He sold cloth, he put money. After that, this is cloth money and this is jaggery money. Do you make any such distinction?
No.
So our happiness is exactly that kind of happiness. What we want is happiness. Now, there is something very interesting. this analysis. So we want happiness. We don't want object. We can't keep distinction and say, I want separately eating happiness.
Mm.
I want separately listening happiness. That will never come. You think it comes. It never comes. But what comes?
It's just happiness.
No. What comes is, supposing your happiness in listening music is 10%. The happiness you experience in eating sweet is 20%. Which one do you prefer? I want eating experience. Why do you want eating experience? Is it because it is a different kind of happiness, or is it a more happiness? You see now, another point of understanding, another view. Supposing a person is experiencing full happiness in listening to music. Would he crave at the same time, I want to experience the happiness of eating also?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking normal eating.
Mm-hmm.
And a person, human being has to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But would he desire, I want to eat sweets? So long as he is experiencing that happiness.
No desireless.
If he has to eat, he will eat. But he is not craving a separate type of a happy experience. Have you noticed that?
No.
That's very, very important for us to understand it. Because we don't understand, we are still under the delusion that if you somehow overcome one type of happiness, you are still bound to No, it is not one type. Whichever gives you more happiness, we crave for it. So what are the points we made? That we all want happiness, and happiness is not in the object. Why? Because if happiness is the nature of an object, under all circumstances, to all people, it should give the same. A 20 watt bulb will give 20 watt bulb only to everybody, all time, any time. It doesn't differ. But every object is giving a different type of happiness, not only to different people, but to the same person at different times. When you are worried, how much happiness can you get out of eating? When a mother loses her child, how much happiness does she get from eating or drinking or things? Can you see that?
Yeah.
So that means happiness is in us. But the fact is, we are not thinking we are happiness is in me. So two facts. We are not realizing happiness is not in us. Second fact is, even when we realize that happiness is in us, we do not have the key to unlock that happiness.
As and when we want.
The only way is through an object. That is why we have become slaves to that object. But if I realize these two facts, happiness is me and I have the key to enjoy myself at any time. The only time we do this kind of thing is deep sleep. I know I am a happy person only when I am. Do you see what I am talking about? Do you understand? There is no object there. And yet we want it. That means we realized that there is happiness. I am happiness. We also realized the only key open to experience that happiness is to get out of this body and
mind.
What is the problem? The problem is, unfortunately, the deep sleep says, my friend, you are welcome for 5 hours. After that, you are an unwanted guest. The front door is whichever, back door or front door. Kick the fellow out. That's why you jump. Come out. I heard that you do like that. Why? Because deep sleep
kicks us.
Anyway, I did not hear it. I heard only recently. Oh, you told. Achcha, thank. Many thanks for giving that. Do you see the point?
Yes.
What are we discussing so far? Prajapati had made him, he said that he is realized, Indra realized. What is the state of realization being described? Now, from now onwards, the eye is for my seeing. It is an instrument. The ear is an instrument for my hearing. For my means the Jivatma hearing. I have nothing to do with it. He knows clearly. But still he can use those instruments for whatever purpose. A person who is liberated while living, he has to use this. So he never gets attached. And he never lacks happiness. Because now he knows that all happiness is within me. And so he can create any number of Brahmalokas. Like Narayana. Narayana and Nara and Narayana. They were doing tapasya. You know that. When Indra sent his stock, old stock. Narayana realized, this is old stock. Poor Indra, he is in desperation as to get some new stock. So, this old stock danced. And they were thinking that he will be tempted like Vishwamitra. So, what did Narayana do? He did like this. This is called Uru. Thai. Immediately, a million times more beautiful woman came out, lady, damsel came out and said, I am pleased with your dance, with my best compliments to the organizer of this. Take it in there. You know, when he can produce from himself,
he'll not get tempted.
Then, do you think he will be tempted by the old stock? When he is the manufacturer, and from whom Indra was buying the second hand. Do you think you will be tempted? So this is the idea. When we are God and when we realize we are the nature of happiness. This is the understanding.
So Maharaj, we cannot distinguish between experience and experiencing because we associate with body and mind.
We are experiencing this separation from this experience. When are we not experiencing? Every second we are experiencing. You know, you look at me. What are you experiencing? What are you experiencing? No, you are looking at me.
See.
You are talking, you know. There was a young man and a young woman dating for a long time. And the man was not saying anything. So the woman told one at last, took and said, John, you say you love me. He said, yes, you love me. He said, say you love me. He said, yes, you love me. You see, when you are looking at me, you are experiencing me. The moment you look at somebody else, your experience of me has come to an end. I am gone, finished, kaput. Yeah. So, that means this experience has come to an end. When this experience has come to an end, you have nothing to do with this.
Right.
That shows you are still there, but your experience is not there. Now you understand? Not only it. So that is why this Upanishad is this particular chapter. As soon as you go to sleep, dream, then your all the waking state experience has come to an end. When you go into dreamless state, the dream experience has come to an end.
Yeah.
When you come out of the dreamless state, that experience is gone constantly, 24 hours it is going on. Then still, how do you say that You are the experience. Because you are never absent. But the experience is always changing. Just like you have a dress on you. Do you ever mistake to say that I am the dress? But people do that all the time. Most of the people, they experience, I am beautiful. What do you mean by I am beautiful? And we also compliment others. You look beautiful. What does that mean? You look beautiful. You seem beautiful.
You were not beautiful before, now you're beautiful.
You go into a shop, see a nice dress.
No.
I should not use the word nice. That should come from somebody.
Yeah.
Then you buy the dress, you put on the dress, and then you come out. Somebody looks at you and says, you look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But before, why did he not say, you look beautiful? Only now he is saying, after you came out of the shop. Yeah, that shows that before you were not beautiful, now you are beautiful. And then the peculiar thing, you know, I am making fun. That the shopkeeper tells you look very beautiful because he wants to sell you a second dress also. But your husband, does he notice you? Do you see any change in me? He looks and says, yes, there is some stain I see in the window. You see? This is what we are, all the time we know experience is not us. Why? Because it is changing. But we are not changing. But we are not paying attention to it. That is what the Upanishad wants. Otherwise, if you know that, you are a realized soul. Then you don't care whether the body is alive or not. You don't care. Because body is a changing experience. Do you understand that? I am young. Is one experience. I am middle-aged, is another experience. What happened to the earlier experience?
It's gone.
Mm. But you are still there, you are saying. That should show.
Can we say we are helplessly creating our
own experience? Yeah, it is
experience.
So obvious.
Yes, in a way, yes. Because it is what makes us go through this is called Maya. And that's why once the teaching says, you know, you are possessed by Maya, but do not be frightened, there is a way out of this Maya too. The whole purpose of the scripture is that. Anyway, so this is what happened, and Indra had realized it. This is the description. This is, verily, this is the Atman whom the gods worship. Everybody is worshipping only that changeless God. Therefore, all the words and all the desired objects are held by them. Why? Held by them means they obtain all of them. Why? Because you are clinging to the eternal. And therefore, all your desires are fulfilled. He obtains all the words and all the desired objects. What does it mean? He will be made the king of the world? No. What it means is, what you have been seeking is happiness.
Yes.
And you have got the happiness of all the world. Why do you want the world?
So Maharaj, can you call the Maya Dish that type?
There is no Dish there. It is, Maya Dish is only from a bound Jiva's point of view. So there is one being, he is my ideal. Because how can he be my ideal? Because I want to be free. Is there anyone who is free? Yes, there is Ishvara who is free. Therefore, I can look at him as my inspiration. That is all. But once you go beyond Maya, then you don't see Maya. When you don't see Maya, who is Mayadhish? These are all descriptions given to say God is a free being. Your certificate is necessary. Otherwise, the poor fellow, nobody will recognize him. Who, having known that Atman, understands it, that he is Atman, he is Brahman. Thus spoke Prajapati. Whenever repetition comes, what does that indicate? That chapter is closed. Always. twice. This is it is a way of saying that this section is complete. Yeah, Prajapati Uvacha, Prajapatihi Uvacha. So this is what the teaching is, the most marvelous teaching. Yeah. We have to think over it. So one small point you have to understand is, why do we are devotees? Why do we want this kind of discussions? Because these help us overcome some problems in life. And what is said is absolute truth. So truth alone can help us. So what happens as a devotee, we are subjected to emotions. So those emotions must be balanced by some intellectual understanding. Otherwise, what happens? Emotions overwhelm us. So we also blame God. So this is supposing a devotee, he is devoted to God. His main path is bhakti. But some tragedy takes place. And then we feel overwhelmed. How to overcome that? Is here, this comes. A mother says, I cannot bear the death of my child. Then, how does it help? See, do you love your child? Yes. How do I know that you love your child? Because I feel the grief. So, how do we measure love of a person? So, if it is 100% love, 100% grief. Some measurements, isn't it? 100% love, how much grief would be there? 100. Suppose 100% love and 25% grief. What does that show?
Detachment.
100% love, 25%
detachment.
No.
Very simple psychology. That is to say, my love for my son is only 25%. The 75% love is from other objects. This, I have got 100% love. My grief is only for 25. Why? Because the other objects are still there. They are not separate from you. You understand? I have my house, I have my car, I have my husband, I have my friends. So my love for them is 75%. They are all there. So I don't need to grieve. But this object is gone. This object, I love this object 25%. How does this analysis work? In this way. Then what happens? Okay, you are so overwhelmed with grief and how much you love. But she says, I love 100%. She doesn't say, I distribute my love to this, this, this and this. Okay, what is the time now? 11 o'clock at night. What are you going to do? I'm going to bed. How are you going to sleep? I will take a sleeping tablet, two sleeping tablets and go to bed. And when will she get up? Say 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock next day. Did I tell you that joke? There was one man who was coming every day late to the office. So the officer scolds him. What is this? Every day you are coming late. Then the man said, sir, I don't get good sleep. That's why I always get up late. That's why I am late for the office. Said, that is a simple problem. I am giving you a dozen sleeping tablets. You take two and go to sleep. You will get excellent sleep. Then you will be. So the man took two tablets and then he came to the office. Later. Half an hour?
Later.
No, half an hour before.
Earlier.
He was waiting at the door. And the officer came half an hour late. Then he said, look, your medicine worked. I am half an hour early today. The man asked, where were you yesterday? So this woman goes to bed. What time she gets up? Let us say 8 o'clock. went to bed at what time? 11 to 8 o'clock. How many hours?
9
hours. Did she remember her son?
No.
Did she know that her son, she has a son and his son died? Did she remember? Multi-storied building. So, the man's house is the second floor. Then he was working in the 8th floor. One day, somebody entered into his room and pushed him out of the window. He was falling. When he came to the second floor, he said, "Today you cook only for 3 persons."
Because
you would not be there. Yeah. So okay. So you see, what were we discussing? How does this help? This woman says, "I love my son so much that I cannot forget him." What is she doing here? Already 9 hours. He has no recollection that she is so and so, and she has a son, and then the son or daughter or whatever died. This is our condition. Okay, at least from 8 o'clock till 11 o'clock, she should remember. Do you think all the time she will remember? She has so many, it looks as though her sorrow is unending, but she has so many other things.
So Maharaj, it is we who create, who give so much value to all these objects.
So our point here is we are devotees, how we are traveling in the path of bhakti, how do these things help us in our day-to-day life? It helps because this is how we can control our negative emotions. On the other side, this intellectual understanding itself is a great help to increase our devotion to God. What we call the highest reality, we give it a name, a form, and when we know that, then we know that He is never far away. He, because it is us, it is us. We don't need to take it, that idea, literally, but it helps at times. We also don't become irrational. So this is to balance. We have to take. In any case, that faculty is there. Intellect is there. Why not use it? And some of these sadhana points that is there. Now you notice, here only the conclusions we discussed. But the sadhana part, 32 years, what did they do? What did Indra do? What did...
I am not the body.
No, nonsense. That is in the end. This is what is called sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. And all this, what imitation of Christ says, that you should not criticize others. And how, when others are giving you trouble, how to put up with the trouble. We find fault with others. So, do you not have any faults? All these beautiful points are there. And when you are studying scripture, are you studying for the sake, your own sake? Or you want to become a scholar and show off your scholarship? How many hidden desires are coming out? Yeah. these are the things which are common. So here is a point which we should all be aware. The path we are traveling may be slightly different from others. But sadhana is the same. How do we understand? Suppose 4 motor cars are traveling and 4 equally from 4 lanes, say from here to Chicago or Detroit or whatever, to St. Louis. 4 lanes, 4 cars are going. All lanes are different, you know. One is faster lane, one is fast lane, one is fastest lane, one is slow lane and all that. Even though all the lanes are different, all of them are, everybody has to go travel the same distance. Do you see what is the point I am making? We are all traveling in different vehicles in different lanes. Depending, Jnana Marga is going in the Jnana Marga lane. A Bhakti, Bhakta is traveling in the Bhakti Marga lane. So the lanes are different, they are all, but all of them are, everybody has to travel every inch of the way. There is no way you can jump the queue. Yeah. So you see the point? Everybody has to go. Sadhana is the same, means the road is exactly the same. They will also have some ups and downs, we also have some ups and downs and all those things. Yeah.
So do books like Imitation of Christ and all this, do they help us, give us like in day-to-day lives how we,
yes,
you know, respond to circumstances?
Yeah. They are very practical.
Practical.
Absolutely practical. So, anything else? What is the time now?
Maharaj, yeah. You know, intellectually, even if we understand it, Maharaj, when something befalls, right, something bad happens, it is hard for any person to step away from that emotion.
Yeah.
And, you know, rethink what one has learned in the past.
Right? Yeah.
So, how do you think one should, put this intellectual learning into application?
See, this question would not arise if you have understood your path properly. That is, what is sadhana? What is the meaning of sadhana?
Practice the intellectual.
What is the practice? Certain things they say. The simplest example is, whatever happens in this world is not in your control. What is the implication?
Don't get affected
by it. Anything can happen. That is the implication. Anything can happen to anybody at anywhere, at any place, in any way, isn't it? But we are supposed to practice that. So why do you say that if some bad thing happened, that is an exception to this?
So it has to be practiced every day, irrespective of...
Don't you see? Yesterday you saw that accident. Did those people expect that accident 1 second before it happened?
No.
It happened. That's why we call it accident. Means it happens without our planning, it is called accident. Mm. So it happens. Every day it is happening. Somewhere or the other. Every day people are dying, isn't it? Mm. So we have to constantly dwell on that and say that this could happen. Then what is the next sadhana? If this befalls me, what shall I do? How do I react? Practice it. This is called simulation. That's why one day I talked about simulation.
Yes.
If you remember. So, what is simulation? Imagine all the bad things that can happen to each one of us and how we are expected to react. Or if you are unable to do it, how Sri Ramakrishna or Holy Mother would react under those very circumstances, and then you put yourself in the shoes of Sri Ramakrishna and say, if I am Sri Ramakrishna, then I would react like this. Yeah.
In that case, what we say, you know, when what you think, you attract those situations. Right?
No.
So if we simulate.
No. Simulation is not attracting. That is a wrong view. What is to happen will happen because of what we did in the past. Some people say that if you think bad thoughts, then bad things will happen. It is a wrong view. Vedanta doesn't accept it. Your thoughts, you think you are God? No, you are implying that whatever I think, that will come true, good or bad. That happens only to God. You are not God. What is meant is, you will spoil your happiness. But whatever is to happen, that is going to happen.
Maharaj, then what is this universal mind and, these thoughts don't go anywhere. They accumulate or they're still there. So they collect their own momentum, right?
So then if our thoughts are negative, then they can align with this negative thoughts floating in the universe.
Exactly.
But then does it mean that negativity can come back and cause...
Absolutely. That is why Swami Vivekananda said, if you have thought one bad thought, it is going to, it may travel the whole universe. Mm-hmm. It may take thousands of years, mm-hmm. millions of years, but when it will come back to you with compound interest.
Then what Nitin was saying, that if you think bad things, they can come true. I'm somewhat confused here.
Yes. If you are thinking bad thoughts, then thoughts themselves will not create karma phala. Thoughts produce a habit of thinking bad thoughts. You think bad thoughts today, you think bad thoughts tomorrow, you think bad thoughts day after tomorrow, then you have made a habit of thinking bad thoughts. That means your control of thinking bad thoughts is becoming slowly less and less. The habit overtakes you. But that doesn't give you karma phala. Then what happens when after, simply one example would be, suppose if a child goes on seeing violent film. Goes on seeing violent film, doesn't bring violence. But one day he forgets what is a thought, and then his overwhelming desire, I must do this. Then he will go and do it. And that act will bring the result. Do you see what is the point now? So why we should not? Because there is very little and very likelihood, if you think bad thoughts, they might come out in the form of actions. That's why, after all, you know, before we do anything, first we think. In our minds, and then even if somebody says, no, I did not think, it just came out from my mouth, and this is called Freudian slip. Now Freudian slip, that means they involuntarily utter a word and they say, we did not think, but actually they have thought about this thought many times, and then without their intention it came out. Without habit, it did not come out. Without intention. What he means to say, I will keep inside, but outside I keep smiling. I won't say you are a rogue. But at some moment, I say rogue. Oh, no, it is a slip of tongue. It is not a slip of tongue. The tongue only utters what is there already inside the mind. Now you understand what is the point? Events do not happen because we just think evil things. Otherwise, you will have to think. It is the same power of thought. You are accepting power of thought. If it is power of thought, you can attract all the wealth in this world. After all, every young man wants to attract all the women in the world, isn't it? Yeah, that's why God loves. You understand? What? The joke. A joke, you know. God created man. Then he asked, what do you want? Man said, I want to find beautiful women every corner of the earth. Then God said, all right, this granted. He created beautiful women but made the earth round. Find out corner. He's still searching. You understand? Yeah, he gets married. Then he says, probably I found the wrong corner. This goes on. This is called Maya Jala. Yeah. What is the point? Thoughts do not produce samskaras. Thoughts only produce the habit of thinking bad thoughts. But unless they become deeds, the karma phala will not come. That is the point. What is a bad habit is the karma phala, you can say. But what is the karma phala there? Bad thoughts by themselves is not karma phala.
Thinking the habit
formed. Bad thoughts, if you think, your mind becomes unpleasant. That is not the real karma phala. Real karma phala is one day or other what you think becomes a deed.
But and for like ahimsa, even mentally you should not harm others.
Yeah.
So even mentally you can really.
Actually, mentally you can think of injury if the motive is good. Suppose you want to punish some child. You are a teacher, you want to punish a child. So, to punish the child, is it a good thing or bad thing?
Good thing.
It depends.
Depends on the circumstances.
If your motive is the good of the child, then it's a very good thing.
Yes.
So, is it called ahimsa? So, not what a person does, what is the motive with which a person does. That is called ahimsa. In fact, Swamiji had defined ahimsa in a totally different. Ahimsa means absence of jealousy. Absence of jealousy. Jealousy is the most ahimsa thing we all wish deviously. Understand? Devious? First point is, jealousy comes only between friends. You don't feel jealous of Bill Gates. But if somebody, your neighbor, got a higher promotion, then immediately you feel jealous. We are always related to people within our status. Suppose some rich woman you see, you may wish, you don't feel jealous. You wish, okay, she has a nice ornament, I also want that ornament. But if by chance some your friend has got that same thing, then you are done for. Smilingly say, what a wonderful thing, congratulations.
Wow.
No, these are the dangers, how subtle this mind is, Maya is. How subtle. Okay, enough. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.